Hey Meg, Jim Daly here along with John Fuller.
Hello.
And we wanted to take a moment to say thanks again for joining us on the Focus on the Family broadcast. It's always so great to have these conversations with you. And this one really struck a chord with parents.
Yeah, in fact, it was one of our highest response programs of 2025.
So congratulations and thanks for helping millions of families to thrive in Christ.
Being boy is good. Male is good. Masculinity is good. And guess what? It's very different from womanhood and femininity. And I think that many people feel if you fuse the two, you can find this sort of no man's land where you can be a little of this and a little of that, but you can't.
Well, that's Dr. Meg Meeker. She's our guest today, sharing about the importance of allowing and encouraging boys to embrace their natural tendencies to be adventure-seeking and risk-taking. This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and Dr. Meeker will offer her insights about boyhood today, offering a pretty compelling narrative that challenges some of the modern paradigms.
Yeah, John, I think today boys are growing up in a world that is often at odds with their emerging masculinity. I mean, we talk about that as toxic and all those kind of adjectives we throw at it. But I am glad I grew up at a time when boys could be boys and we got into trouble and we did things and, you know, it's just been boy, innocent boy stuff, you know, trying to be adventuresome in the neighborhood or whatever it might be. But these are things that are so discouraged now that the culture frowns upon. And I am looking forward to our discussion today with Dr. Meg Meeker, pediatrician, and she has so many years of knowledge about boys and girls too. But today we're talking about her book, Boys Should Be Boys, Seven Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. Having two boys, I'm looking forward to this.
There's a lot of content here and we're going to get into it. Dr. Meeker is always a great guest, a popular guest. She's widely recognized as one of the country's leading authorities on parenting and teens and children's health. You mentioned the book, and we have that here at the ministry. Learn more about Dr. Meeker and her book when you stop by FocusOnTheFamily.com or give us a call, 800, the letter A in the word family.
Meg, welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much. I love seeing you. I love being here. It's always so uplifting and encouraging.
Well, it's fun.
So and it is fun.
You know, it's. I think the opening question is a little off topic, but you know, you have been a pediatrician for about 30 years, I think you mentioned to me. 30 years of observing young people and some of these patients you've known for a long time, right?
Yeah.
When you look at the culture, when you first became a pediatrician, to now, do you see a drastic change in the environment, just generally?
Oh, it's enormous. And as we were talking before, people say, well, aren't you going to retire? And I said, no, because the challenges that parents have now are so much more intense than they were 10, 20 years ago. When I was in medical school, just, you know, to kind of, this dates myself, but in the 80s, in the DSM, four, three at that time, homosexuality was a psychiatric disorder.
Yeah.
And now we've got so much more that, you know, with the transgender, we've got the drug use, we've got a huge rise in depression and anxiety. And when I came out of medical school, really it was the psychiatrist who took care of kids with anxiety and depression. Pediatricians didn't have to know that much about it. That is completely shifted because now psychiatrists are so full with taking care of the kids who are schizophrenic, manic depression, that a lot of it has spilled into the laps of pediatricians. So we have learned how to take care of anxiety and depression because it's such a big part of our work. That's huge. And a lot of pediatricians don't know what to do because it takes a lot of time and energy and training to learn how to take care of kids with depression and anxiety. So on many levels, it's really changed.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the pediatricians, I mean, you're seeing these kids for the first time and for a long time working with the parents on their physical well-being, but their emotional well-being as well, more so than any other specialty, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're, you know, right from the get-go, you're with the mom and dad. I can remember those early visits. We had some hilarious visits with our pediatrician with Trent and Troy. They were actually, our one doctor was just had a great sense of humor, so he would tug at us as parents and go to our weaknesses pretty constantly. You know?
It's fun. It was just fun.
We were the overzealous parents, so you remember that type.
Oh, well, right? Yes, exactly.
You'd hook them and bring them in.
You do.
You know.
Yes.
But in that regard, you wrote this book probably 10 years ago now, mm-hmm. Boys Should Be Boys, Seven Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. I would think you're saying now this is even more intense. Yeah. And speak to that environment with boys that I led with in terms of how we as a culture are underserving boys and not allowing them to be boys.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote this book because doing my research for my book, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, I realized how under siege men are. Adult men, and how masculinity had taken on this in the public. It connoted oppression, people being mean from a woman's standpoint. Women sort of, you know, taught this. And I thought, wow, you know, if this is happening to men, what's happening to boys? And that's what really prompted me writing the Boy Should Be Boy book, because I saw this emergence of the degradation of masculinity and turning masculinity into an ugly, dirty word. And I think that comes out of a lot of the women's movement, you know, from way back. But I really did it, and I really believe it's more pertinent now than ever, because in the book I say being boy is good, male is good, masculinity is good, and guess what? It's very different from womanhood and femininity. And I think that many people feel if you fuse the two, you can find this sort of no man's land where you can be a little of this and a little of that, but you can't.
You know, let me ask you this, because it seems to me that those of us in the Christian faith understand these distinctions that God made us with two genders, you know, not 127, and that he created certain attributes that generally fit, not always, the shoe can be on the other foot sometimes. I'd like to say the 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. But in that regard, the culture has so demonized male everything that it's difficult to, for even for dads, to teach their boys what it means to be masculine in the most healthy of ways. Yeah. So first of all, let me have you address that issue that, as a physician, there are distinctions between male and female. Our brain chemistry is different. Our anatomy is different. And it starts to play into the culture when we talk about, you know, the sports issue and all those things. Men are generally stronger than women because of our frame and our muscular system. It's just the way it is. But knock down that idea when you go to university, oh, there's no difference between men and women. We're all the same. We're not.
You know, it's really...
It's laughable now, but they still talk about it.
They still talk about it. And it's so fundamental to, you know, human understanding of the world around us. A two-year-old knows the difference between... A six-month-old knows the difference between male and female, mom and dad. The voice is different. They smell different. They feel different. You know, and from a physician's standpoint, it sounds kind of crazy to say that men and women would be the same. All you have to do is take a couple tissue samples, if you would, of the muscles, or look at the brains or the hearts. It's physiologically totally different. And yet, how can we deny that? Because that's where we've come. We've come square up against truth that's so clear. It's like saying, the sun really isn't in the sky because I don't believe the sun is in the sky. Yeah. Well, that's laughable. It's the same thing with, you know, men and women. And so I think we've stooped to a whole new level of argument when we're trying to argument just fundamental, clear starting point truths that you don't have to be a believer to see that men, you know, completely different, have different anatomy than women. Think of if you were in the second grade, and this is how destructive this
I was once in the second grade.
Once in the second grade.
It was a long time ago.
Successfully passed.
I do remember. It was a pivotal year.
See, this is how crushing this whole argument can be to children. You're in the second grade. A little boy comes in. You clearly know he's a little boy. Now, maybe he has, you know, gender-neutral clothes on or whatever. And the teacher said, no, that's not Sam. That is, we're going to call her Samantha now. It's not Samson, it's Samantha. And the little kid looks and goes, but that's a boy. And then, but the teacher says, no, it's not a boy. You have to call it a girl. So now as a second grader, they think, well, clearly the teacher's right. My ability to assess the world around me isn't accurate. So maybe the way I think isn't right. So I've got to be very careful. So really what you're doing is you're teaching children that their they can't even trust their instincts and perceptions.
Natural law.
Natural law. So
God-given
now
natural
you grow
law.
That kid up and they're 15. Their whole mind has been scrambled. Mm.
It's so true. And I'm thinking about the messaging that occurs toward boys that in somehow just because you're a boy, you're bad.
Exactly.
And we may not even notice that, even as parents, but how the schools disparage that. Yeah. What is happening in the culture, I think in both parts, one that we have to be equal, and we have to, as teachers and people engaged with young people, we have to communicate that. And then secondly, this idea that boys are worse than girls. Mm-hmm. And rather than both are beautiful, both are great, both are created in God's image. But who's winning with that?
Well, you know, we say everybody has to be equal, but we don't really mean it. We want women to be more powerful than men. And this is what's really emerged. And this is where the denigration of masculinity, the idea of masculinity, manhood, has come from. And I've seen it, you know, all along since the late 70s and into the 80s, you know, the emergence of women's power. Women don't want to be equal to men. They want to be better and they want to pound. And it's too bad the idea that you can champion both a boy and a girl or a man and woman side by side. They don't believe that's true. One has to win or the other has to win. If you look in early elementary schools, a lot of the school teachers are women. And when they come into a classroom and they've been taught via, you know, subconsciously television, radio, media, and so forth, that masculinity is not a good thing, that boys are kind of out of control, they need to be medicated because they're just too bouncing, they don't color in the lines. You've got a bunch of young women who are in early elementary and elementary schools. And so there's this natural undergirding bias against boys that begins that early.
Huh. Well, I mean, you know, yeah. This is a comedic example of that. But, you know, when you're at Christmas time, you're watching The Christmas Story. And so who's out at the flagpole sticking their tongue on the
exactly.
flagpole? It's not a bunch of girls. It's the boys.
It's the boys.
The double dog dare you type.
Yes, exactly.
That is an elementary school playground.
Exactly.
And that's what I remember.
Right.
And the point is, it's unhealthy to work against that.
Right.
And to tell boys not to be daring, not to be adventuresome. It is kind of that God-given instinct of what we are as male.
It is.
To go to the edge, to be the pioneer. It doesn't preclude girls from doing things like that. But man, don't make us girls.
Well, and that's the big rub, is that I believe we're at a time where we don't really want two sexes. We want neutrality. We want sameness. We don't want equality, we want sameness. And in order to do that, we have to emasculate men and boys. And I think that, you know, it's interesting you talk about risk, taking a risk. We're also a very risk-averse society.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want anybody to be harmed. Parents, young parents, they don't want their kids vaccinated. They don't want them this. They don't want them on antibiotics. Some young parents will say, I don't want my parents to hold my baby because for the first 3 months because of this and this and this. We don't want anybody taking a risk. And if there's anything inherent to masculinity, it's risk-taking.
Yeah, so true. An example of that. Here at Focus, you know, we have donors who are real estate developers. And I'm telling you, these guys are crazy. I mean, they are maverick personalities. They, you know, they'll tell me, yeah, we're up $10 million 1 year, I'm down $20 million the next. Their swings financially are so absurd. Even as a man, I'm like, that's crazy. But they have, in addition to their maleness, they've got this risk tolerance that is so high. It's kind of like a fighter jet pilot or a experimental pilot. There's an adrenaline rush that goes with their risk taking that is not typical.
They're frontline warriors.
Right.
They want to be on the front line. It's very interesting, too, because we can say, articulate the differences between men and women, boys and girls. But think about this. You ask any kid if his mom was different from his dad, there's no question.
Absolutely.
You were a little more afraid of your dad. I was. You also look, I can't tell you the number of mothers, single mothers I see who are afraid of their teenage boys. Because teenage boys are angry who don't have a dad around, and they will go at their mother. If you think about to what was it in Louisiana a number of years ago where they had a lot of violence in the school, and these kids were out of control, these teenage boys were out of control, and a 40 men in the area said, we're done with this, we're going to appoint one dad to go in the school every day and just walk the halls. And so one man, I think they're African Americans, walked in the halls, and within 2 weeks the violence went away.
Yeah.
Masculinity is, it's a presence, it's a power, it's a spirit, if you will, in a very positive way that's very different from the feminine spirit. And it's so powerful, it's hard to articulate it. And yet everybody knows it's there, but we're in a culture that wants to neutralize masculinity and then femininity as well.
Well, one of the things that the culture works against, men know this, boys know this, there is a pecking order. You go to the gym, there's a pecking order. You know it pretty quickly when you walk in, who's the top dog, who's the second in command, who's at the bottom. It just is. It's true on the playground when you're picking teams. Thankfully, I used to be the guy that got to pick some of the teams. Ended up quarterback of the football team. I mean, there's part of that. And again, there's just this institutional hatred toward even that orientation that there should be leadership in the playground. Right. We want to eliminate leadership in the playground. Why do we want to do that? Let's get to the book content. You list seven secrets. I want to get into that. So why don't you just list them, and then we'll come back and ask some questions about each one.
You bet. Know how to encourage your son. Understand what your boys need. Their needs are different from girls. Recognize that boys were made for the outdoors, sticks and trees and rocks. Remember that boys need rules. Acknowledge that virtue is not just for girls. Learn how to teach your son about the big questions in life. And remember that the most important person in your son's life is you. Now, those sound very basic, but when you really drill down, a lot of parents, when it comes to boys, particularly mothers, how do I encourage my son? What do I say? You know, I don't want to step on toes. So they sound basic, but when you actually try to live them out, it can be a little trickier.
No, that's good. Let's go to the first one and unpack that a little bit. That's knowing how to encourage their sons. You're not talking about false praise.
No.
Because we
sniff
that out pretty quick, too. Everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah.
That ain't true.
Yeah.
And sorry for the grammar there, but it's on purpose. Yeah. But the idea that it's not false praise that sons need, but what do they need in that area of lifting up?
Well, again, fundamentally, parents need to understand your boy is not your daughter. So if you're going to encourage your son in the correct way, in a biblical way, you encourage his masculinity.
What does that sound like? Give me an example.
It sounds like, you know, go outside and find something to do and go make a fort. Go figure out what to do. Take a risk. Climb the tree. Make snowballs. Make an ice fort. If you fall off the top of it, it's okay. You know, to really encourage your kids to live and to, I always say, every playground at school should have a couple of big trees in it. You'd never find a tree in a playground at school because they don't want the boys to fall out and hurt themselves.
Right.
Or they don't want the boys to be able to climb the top of the tree and the girls can't.
They've been changing a lot of the equipment at schools near us.
Seriously.
They've been making it safe. Oh, the slides are gone. The metal slides are
Everything's
gone.
Everything's flat.
Everything. There's all the plastic chips at the bottom now. So when you fall, you hit something
so
soft.
So if you're going to encourage your son to walk in a masculine way, you encourage him to use his physical and emotional strength. Hmm. And that means climbing and running and, yes, hitting, maybe not other people, but encourage that physical strength because the bottom line is men are stronger than women.
I mean, again, Meg, some people are going to be hearing this and going, oh my gosh, that's so archaic.
Well,
they are so behind the times. And it's fine because this is what we all agree on, you know, in terms of the Christian ethos to this, men will be men. We need Davids. We need the little boy Davids.
We do.
In the playgrounds.
Exactly. Who are not afraid.
Yeah, meaning I'll slay the giant. Give
exactly.
it to me.
I will get hurt. I don't mind being wounded. I don't even mind my feelings being hurt and a girl calling me something. And for those who say that men aren't stronger than women, I would ask any woman out there, if you're in downtown Chicago at 1 in the morning, do you feel differently walking on a dark street alone or with a 6'2" husband? There's no question.
Oh, without a doubt. Let me, again, for the parents that are listening, and they are struggling a little bit, going, okay, replay that tape, but for daughters. I mean, if boys need that encouragement, go out, build something, use your muscles, go have fun, climb something high, and let me know if you fall out of the tree.
Exactly.
What's the daughter version of that? Again, just this is the extra for the parents that are going, what's the difference? So how would you speak to a daughter in encouraging her?
Well, I would encourage her to be physically active, but I wouldn't encourage her to do something that I know is physically going to be very dangerous for her. I would encourage her to use her character strengths. I'd encourage her to use her physique. You know, if you're good at something, be good at it, but don't compare yourself to a boy in that situation. You can compete with girls, but you don't need to compete with boys. That's another thing about boys. Competition is normal. Mm-hmm. They like to compete with one another. Girls like to compete, but in a different way. You know, compete intellectually, psychologically. Go out and
no, no, they'll whip us.
No.
It's so true.
You know, but here's what every parent, a good parent, should do. Look at each of your children and say, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses? You know, and it doesn't matter if they're physical or emotional, psychological, mental, intellectual, and size them up and find the best and encourage your kids to capitalize on those strengths.
Yeah, that's good.
Character strengths in particular.
Mm. Yep.
You know, if you have a very, you know, a child who shows a lot of mercy, or maybe they're very courageous, or maybe they're a very patient person, tell them that and then help them grow that character strength.
Mm-hmm. This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, and our guest today is Dr. Meg Meeker. We're covering some of the content in her terrific book, Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. Get a copy from us here at the ministry. The link is at focusonthefamily.com.
John, you have a daughter that's very outdoorsy.
I do.
So I know that was running through your head.
Yeah.
So it's not, again, it's not a one size fits all, but I mean,
she lives in state parks. Yeah, she lives outdoors and climbs mountains and runs marathons, and there's no end to her delight in being outdoors. But she also has this very feminine side to her that wants to connect with people, that has this huge heart, particularly for kids who are at risk and struggling. So I see kind of that mom part of her built in, kind of coming out. But yeah,
interesting, Meg. I mean, again, this isn't a one size fits all. And so you go with your child's bent in that regard. If they love the outdoors, that's great.
And that's what God did with us.
Yeah.
You know, He created us so differently. And that's what freedom really is. Having the freedom to embody different parts of your character. The feminine part of your character with its soft and tender and wants to be very patient and kind. But there's also a different part of your feminine character, which means you can be very physically strong and capable. My niece is an elite athlete from University of Michigan. She's very kind and sweet. And the freedom for the male is that I can be fully masculine and I can capitalize on my physical strengths, my tendency to want to take a risk, to want to drive fast, even though, you know, it's not a smart thing. But I can embrace that. But I can also embrace another side of me that loves opera, that wants to, you know, take care of my wife, you know, when she's really sick, the tenderness. And that's the beauty of the complexity of the human spirit and the human person.
Mm.
And I think that the damage we do with boys in particular is we try to put them in a lane and we say, this is your lane, and it cannot include traditionally masculine character qualities because we don't like them.
Right. Right.
Because those characters are going to hurt women.
Right.
Right. Leadership is a bad word to women. We don't want you to lead in the home because that means you're going to oppress us, tell us what we need to do, tell us what we need to wear, tell us how we need to think. Well, that's archaic.
Yeah.
Right. How did Jesus lead? He washed our feet. I mean, my, you know, if we really understand biblical leadership and we train our boys to be Christ-like men, this is a man who had no aversion to risk at all. He put it all on the line.
Absolutely. You know, right now I'm thinking of the Good Samaritan things that are happening in the culture. And not long ago we had that case in New York where that man took action against somebody who is threatening the lives of those on the subway. And of course, there's been the person that was set on fire. The context for my question is this: when the culture diminishes masculinity, you have fewer people willing to step up to right injustices. because the cost becomes too high.
We are less safe.
But it is evidence of exactly what you're talking about. When we don't encourage good men to take charge, to step up, to engage when there's danger, you're going to have a lot of just passerbys.
You know, we're really willing to shred truth and get rid of truth in order to create a narrative we want. It fits our feelings. Huh. You know, men don't need to be strong. We don't need them to help us on a subway because they're really not any different from us, which means then if somebody steps up to get rid of a guy who's harming you, that's a bad thing. How twisted is that?
Yeah, just to control the situation.
Just to control the narrative that masculinity is a bad thing, therefore it can't be exercised even if someone's life is at risk. That is so twisted.
Yeah. Listen, let's move to number two. Secret number two is understanding what our boys need.
Yeah.
Now, explain that. What does that mean, knowing what they need?
Well, they need a lot because they're very complicated people, just like women are complicated people. First of all, the discouragement to many dads out there with a 4 or 5 year old kid who falls down in the playground and starts to cry, and the dad comes up and just said, you know, just don't act like a girl. Just, you don't need to cry. Just sort of suck it up. Boy, men should not behave like this. And then the mother comes in and criticizes the dad. Boys are emotional creatures. Boys, in large part, get their emotional language from their mothers, in general. Now, there's some dads who teach it to their sons. And by that, I mean, before a child is age 7, they learn cues from their mom about, is it okay to cry? I feel like I want to cry, but dad's looking at me like I'm a bad person if I do. No, it's okay to cry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to feel. It's okay to, feel very compassionate. So mothers need to learn that that's part of their son's life, is building a solid emotional life and feeling secure and good about it. So that's a need that boys have, usually comes from the mom, this emotional language. Then as boys get older, it's all about dad. Because I often say a boy needs to learn how to be a man by watching a good man. He needs to see a man in action. Boys watch their fathers. They don't watch their mothers when they're 13 or 15. That's a little creepy. If you're 13 and you're watching your mother, they want, how does a guy act? How does my, they have that instinct to want to be masculine.
Yeah.
And dad pulls that out of them. Mothers don't pull that out of them. We don't know how. And we're taught, just like everybody else's, that masculinity is oppressive to the woman's spirit or to her womanhood. So we just sort of stand there silent. We don't know how to encourage our boys to go out and take risks. We don't want to. We don't want our boys hurt. So moms need to move out of the way, and it's got all about dad in the teen years. Teach your son how to be a man who treats women well, who is not threatened by women, who is not threatened by being a strong man and exercising his ability to do well what his female counterpart can't, and to be okay with that.
Yeah, you know, Meg, our experience with our oldest particularly, I mean, he was not a compliant child. And so he had his decisions and he knew where he wanted to go, I mean, pretty much right out of the womb, I'd say. And Trent was just that strong-minded. I can remember when we were doing foster care, we had the foster kids in. First, he was terrific with those kids. It was amazing. He became the big brother, and I was so proud of him. And he was kind of struggling at school a bit at that time. And I remember saying to Gene, you know, it's pretty awesome he gets an A+ for being a big brother to these foster kids. We need to recognize that capability. And he really got into it. He just, his heart was for those kids. It was amazing. But I remember specifically a time when he was no longer at the house. He had moved out and was going to college and still is. But he came over for dinner, had a great meal that Gene had prepared, and he sent a text and said, Mom, thank you so much for taking the time to make that great meal tonight. And I remember looking at it. Gene came and showed it to me, and I went, who is that? But it was a moment that his maturity caught up. And I mean, it's rare that he doesn't send a note like that to Gene after coming over for dinner now. Very consistent and very mature, very thankful. And I think it's just encouragement to parents to allow their boys' brain to catch up. Like the male brain matures like at 25 is what the research is showing. So you may need a little more grace for some boys because they may not always get it. But speak to that idea for the parent to be looking outward because we're so in the moment.
Yeah.
But you know, when that child is 22, 23, 24, that boy, you're going to see some significant changes, or you should, in attitude.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times I've had parents of a 15, 14-year-old boy come in and say, he won't study. He won't do anything. He's so unmotivated. He just, and I said, you know, A, his story isn't written. And the way he is at 14 is not going to be the way he is at 15. And I often tell parents, your job as a parent, when your child is 2 or 3 or 5, is to raise a great 25-year-old. So here's the good news and the bad news. If your child is acting, you know, lazy at 15 and he doesn't want to be motivated, which is really common for boys at 15.
Typical.
Here's the good news. You have 10 more years to help him get it right. And so you're absolutely right. You know, maturity, physical maturity, a cognitive maturity, emotional maturity, those are critical. That's a critical 10-year period.
Yeah.
So to really encourage parents, you know, whatever antics your son is up to at 15 or not up to, it's going to be completely different. You can have it. I remember my son went through a period. He just really didn't want to talk to me. It just broke my heart. What was I doing? I couldn't. I tried to talk to him on emotionally a more deeper level. And he didn't want to do that. He just didn't want to do it. But I had to convince him that he really should, because I'm his mother and I'm tender. And he pushed away. And my feelings were so hurt. Then I realized he's a boy. Let him go. That's a whole show unto itself.
Ooh, yeah.
Let him go, because he'll circle back around,
yeah,
and then he'll write the notes. And for my son, it was sending tulips.
Oh, my. Yeah, and all the moms.
Never got them for my daughters.
All the moms began to cry.
But he didn't do it until he was in his, well into his 20s.
Yeah.
He wouldn't talk to me at 15, sending tulips at 25.
But I think, Meg, the difficulty with that, I think particularly for moms, it is hard to think out 7 years, yes, 10 years. Because the emotions are right here in front of you. It's so tangible. And you don't think this caveman is ever going to get, you know, mature. Like, how many times have you told him to say please and thank you? And it's still not working. And they're 15. And, you know, you get in this moment where you can't imagine them being smarter, better, more thoughtful at 23, 24.
Well, and a mother panics, and dad's probably too. If they're not doing it, and I've had him for 15 years under my roof, if he doesn't get it now, he's never going to get it. That's not true. You know, your son knows what you want. He knows you want him to say please and thank you. But for some reason that has nothing to do with you, he's just not ready to do it. Let him be. And so I really want to encourage parents. You have to think of the long game. At 15, at 10, even at 18, his story isn't written. You know, I've been doing this long enough. I've worked with a whole generation of parents now, and now I'm seeing their kids. So I really can say this with a lot of honesty and sincerity. Let him be. His story isn't written at 15.
Yeah, and then, boy, and then hang on. It'll get better. Trust us. Meg, this has been so good. Let's continue. We've really only covered three, and that third one we kind of did prior to number two, which is, you know, allowing your boys to be outside and be physical and do that outdoor stuff. Let's pick up next time with the rest of the seven, and we'll dive into those. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you. So much fun.
Yeah. And I hope this has grabbed your imagination, whether you're the parent of a boy or the grandparent of a young man. This is a resource that you need to get. And man, share it with those around you who are struggling. How many people at church do you see? And we saw that we just went to an amusement park. And man, the out of control kids, I was like, I just wish I had a box of resources I could hand this book and other books out to. But it's always an opportunity to be a light in someone's life and to do that with wisdom, obviously. But get a copy of Meg's book, Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. I think it addresses all the key issues of the culture today. And you can get that directly through Focus. If you can give us a gift on a monthly basis, that'd be great. Be a part of the ministry, helping parents and helping marriages, helping save babies. I can't think of a bad thing that we do here, John. Yeah. So be part of it. Help us in every way and sign up to be a monthly sustainer. A one-time gift is good as well, but we'll send you a copy of Meg's book as our way of saying thank you when you support the ministry in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our number is 800, the letter A in the word family, 800-232-6459. Or we've got details for how you can donate and request resources, including this book, Boys Should Be Boys, at focusonthefamily.com. And on behalf of the entire team, thanks for joining us today for part one of what is now a two-part conversation with Dr. Meg Meeker. Plan to join us next time as we continue the conversation and once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.
Two of the best things any good dad can do to a son: make sure you grow your son's faith, take him to church, teach him about God, share your experiences, and be present in his life. If you only do those two things, your kid's not going to go wrong.
Dr. Meg Meeker is our guest today on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. She'll be encouraging you as a parent to steer your sons toward healthy masculinity. I'm John Fuller, and Dr. Meeker has some great advice for us as she returns for a second day. And if you didn't catch the previous episode, you can listen to that at focusonthefamily.com.
John, we spoke with Dr. Meeker last time about encouraging and guiding our sons. You have boys. I have boys. You also have daughters.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I've lived that, being the dad of two sons, how to encourage them, how to guide them, how to control them, how to get them in a headlock when necessary.
They're so physical. Oh, my goodness.
I love it. We used to wrestle in the basement, and Gene would yell down from upstairs, "Everything okay down there?" "Yeah, we're just doing normal stuff."
Yeah.
Oof, off. You know, it was so much fun, but the boys loved it. I mean, we did Nerf fights at night with glow-in-the-dark Nerf bullets and all kinds of. It was a blast.
Yeah.
I love being a dad of boys. But you look at the culture today, and the culture is broadly is not as supportive of boyhood.
Yeah, that experience you mentioned is not
condoned. We'll get negative comments about it. You shouldn't talk about the Nerf fights. Come on, everybody, let's relax. Boys love danger. They love excitement. They love challenge. They love, and you know, girls have the things that they enjoy too, and that doesn't put the other down. It just, this is our category. This is how we feel better about ourselves, and we gain confidence in that arena. And we need, as parents, to be able to develop those boys into men. Let me tell you, a strong culture has strong men. And if you don't believe that, just look at the weak cultures around the world, including our own, which is so feminized now that you don't even feel emboldened to protect innocent life on the subway, in the streets of big cities, etc. We need men who are willing to be men.
Mm. And Dr. Meg Meeker, as I said, is here. She is a leading pediatrician helping parents with really critical, helpful insights on children and teens. She's written a number of books, and we're drawing on one of those in particular for these conversations, Boys Should Be Boys, Seven Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. And we have copies of this book here at the ministry. You can find out more about getting a copy and about our guest when you stop by focusonthefamily.com.
Meg, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's so much fun.
It was good. Our last conversation was a good kickoff to how do we raise boys into manhood and do that well, and really mom's roles in doing that, particularly. Let me kick off day two here with a question. Somebody in the culture that has really intrigued me, Jordan Peterson. You know, he's very controversial. I don't know where he's at in the faith spectrum. I've heard from some people that know him well that he's emerging as a Christian. But that hasn't been where he has been as a psychologist. Of course, he's from Canada. But basically, he has been on this theme that manhood is a good thing, and we've got to stop disparaging it so that boys can grow up to be good men. And the more good men we have in the culture, the better off the culture is going to be. But he, those little clips I watch on YouTube of him combating feminists and female journalists who, they're so antagonistic because they believe wholeheartedly that men are evil, men are bad, and you can smell it, feel it, hear it in their tone.
Yeah.
And he just dismantles that. Mm-hmm. Speak to that phenomena, especially as a Christian woman, a woman who is a medical professional, a doctor. What is he tapping into? What are his observational skills that are going, okay, something isn't right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think as a psychologist, he's seeing the vitriol and the anger that underlies everything they do, and particularly when they're talking about men. We can trace this back to where it really all started in the 1950s, and women, well, early on they couldn't vote, and then they were housewives, they could only be a teacher or nurse, and then women said, we're done with this. I remember this, you know, the Gloria Steinem era. You know, I used to like her, which I don't anymore. It's embarrassing to say. But anyway, the idea is that they have this power. We want the power. So women were going to take the power. They started to take it back. They moved into the workforce. And they said, we're not only going to have power, we're going to beat men. I remember I went to an all-women's college and them saying, we're going to beat men. Whatever they have, we're going to have it and have it better. And so in doing that, they had to become super beings. They had to become not just mothers, but mothers and fathers. And oh, they had to be mothers, fathers, and then they had to have jobs and create a family that didn't need a man in it. And if you could do that and succeed at that, you reached the top of what womanhood is all about. And then once they got there, they sort of said, well, now what? And what they did is they couldn't do that but embrace men along the way. So they are still living with this idea that masculinity means you behave like a man in the 50s, because what we've done in the past 40 years is push men, criticize them. So now they're saying, okay, well, let's redefine masculinity as something that's very, very weak. What Jordan Peterson is tapping into is this anger that women harbor because they don't really know what masculinity is and if it can be good.
Right.
So it's frightening. Mm-hmm. And anything that you are afraid of, you're angry at and you have to get rid of. And that's really where it comes from with women. And I think that in my Boys Should Be Boys book, in order for a mother to raise a great son, she has to like masculine men.
Huh. There's a thought.
But most women don't because they're afraid of it, particularly women who are in careers. I was trained in a male-dominated career at the time. 30% of my class was women, 70% were men. And I'll never forget, my dad told me, he said, you're going to face a lot of obstacles. Keep your head down. Do great work.
Right.
So I didn't focus on what men around me were doing to try to trip me up, which they did, you know, harassment and that kind of thing. Keep your mind off of that. Focus on great work. And I was able to work in a male-dominated environment and still like men. I mean, that is an oxy. You know, a lot of women say, how dare you say I like men? I do. It doesn't mean that I want male attention. Men are good. Masculinity is good because femininity is good, and I like being feminine.
You know, let me ask you this question. And last time we talked about this as well. So if you didn't hear the program last time, go back and listen to it. You can get that at the website or get the app for your phone. You can listen to all the programs. But this idea that there have been bad men.
Oh,
we can't be, you know, naive about this. There is a certain negative expression of masculinity where it's power, it's often it's sexual abuse or physical abuse because we are physically stronger. We can dominate in that way. We can intimidate. So those things are all true, but it's kind of like anything where if 5% are horrible, and that may be quite high, but whatever small percentage are terrible, then it gets applied to everybody. And that's not the case. I mean, again, if you have 95-97% of men are good people that want to live life well and protect and provide and do those things that we believe in, that's a good thing. But don't paint us with the broad stroke of that other 3-5% that may be misbehaving.
Well, and that's been a huge problem, is that culturally, because women have dominated the narrative about who men are, and it's primarily been negative. We won't put up with this. We won't put, you know, the Me Too movement. We're not going to put up with the sexual abuse and so forth. Okay, that's all good. But when there's no positive to balance it, it's like all men have been thrown into the same pot. You're all potentially sexual abusers. So I have to treat you as though you're very dangerous. Because the narrative for women has been rewritten. by feminists. And now we're sort of trying to settle it. I was like, wait a minute, we really do want to be home with our kids. Wait a minute, we really do want to do this. That hasn't happened with men. Mm. The only people trying to redefine masculinity have been women. And what they're trying to do is say, no, 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 we want to sort of neuter you a little bit. We want you nice. We want you quiet. We want you kind. We don't really want you at the center of the family. We want you to kind of orbit. Christ was a lion and a lamb. We do lambs really well because they're safe. We don't like lions. And there's a part of masculinity that has that lion persona.
Huh.
And women are terrified of it. And men are afraid because they just... Here's one thing I've noticed. Good men who are married to tough women stay quiet. Mm-hmm. They recede into the background. And one man, and I said this to my husband, who sometimes recedes into the background. I'm just kidding. But I said, what is the deal? Why? And I said this to him. He said, I'll tell you why. Because if a man really challenges that and says, you're not going to do that anymore, a man has the sense that his power could be uncontrollable. Huh. And that men live with a sense that they have to constantly control and contain their masculine power.
Yeah.
Which is really scary for a lot of people. But it is what it is, what it is. So let's embrace it. Let's live with it. Women have a power, but it's not that physical sense of I need to go make something right no matter what it takes and to use my physical ability. And so that's what Jordan is getting at.
Yeah.
Jordan is, in his brilliant way, is putting his finger right on that and saying, that's what you don't like. That's what you're afraid of. But a woman talking with him will not identify that. She wouldn't even say what I'm saying here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are sociologists that have talked about this idea that when men become oppressed, things will begin to happen, bad things.
Bad things.
And I think we're seeing that. You know, that's why crime is up. That's why things are up, because that's how it oozes out. When they're not called to something higher, something better in their masculinity, that masculinity goes negative.
Exactly. And when you want to take masculinity and sort of step into it in the wrong definition, and the wrong definition today is men are just step aside, mom's got everything, we can control everything, we can do everything we need, but all we really need to do is have you show up periodically, or worse, you know, if I want to be a single mom, just give me your sperm and all as well. This can be a very, very, very healthy family. No, it can't. And kids know that. But I think that because the idea, the notion of masculinity right now is so up for grabs.
Huh.
It's really up for grabs, and we're allowing the wrong people to define it, which is angry women.
Yeah, wow, that's a powerful statement. A powerful statement. Listen, last time we started with your 7 secrets to helping boys grow into manhood. I want to pick up with that. Again, people can go back and listen to the others. Mm-hmm. Number 4 was remember that boys need rules.
Yes.
All the guys here went, oh, no, not that one.
See, men understand this, I think, a little bit better than mothers do. And here's why. Because men have this sense, and I think it's particularly prominent during the teen years, this sense of power. I can drive 95 miles an hour down a country road, run into a tree, get out of the car, and go home for dinner. A 15-year-old girl knows there's no way that's going to happen. So, but mothers, I think, don't fully understand this sense of power that a young boy needs or has, okay? And since we don't want to hurt our son's feelings and we want to be nice and we want to talk everything through, we tend to be very, very loose with the boundaries and understanding, look, mom, this 15, 16, 17-year-old boy has a million creative ways to kill himself every day. And, you know, he can cut down a tree and have the tree fall on him and it's not going to hurt him. Mothers have a hard time appreciating that. So we're very lax on boundaries. Boys are dangerous creatures. For their survival, they need walls to run into, to be blunt. Henry Cloud would say, the wall is the boundary. I'm saying with a boy, it's a wall. because they need to run into something, go, oh, that is not going to work.
That doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good. I can't do that. And in many ways, you know, when they're a teenage boy, they need a man to run into because he may be the only boundary, and that's how they feel safe. Boys need clear boundaries and rules, and they do fine with them. Yeah. Because if men are anything, they go, oh, problem? Tell me the solution. Got it. Women will not share their, you know, what's causing the problem and how can, you know, we solve the problem and there's 10 different solutions. No, tell the boy, you have to be home by midnight. And if you're not be home by midnight, this is what's going to happen. You can't drive the car for a month. No, that will oppress this. No, we need to keep our sons safe physically, emotionally, and so forth. They need rules.
In this case, let's talk about the smartphones around this issue. Have you seen a change of that?
Smartphones. First of all, I
smartphones hate, dumb people.
Smartphones dumb people. I hate them. My husband uses a flip phone because he, anyway. Phone use and social media, which girls aren't particularly on social media, but too much screen time is very bad for boys because many teenage boys have difficulty communicating and articulating feelings and thoughts, particularly to girls. This makes it 10 times worse because they're less engaged in healthy conversation and communication. And so the less time boys spend with screens, the healthier they're going to be emotionally. And the relationships are going to be much, much healthier the less time they are on screens. Mm. And for boys, a lot of that screen time is video games. We know the more time a boy spends on a violent video game, the more aggressive he becomes. It rewires his brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Clearly.
That area of the oversaturation, this is all within that rules orientation,
yes.
The oversaturation of sexuality and violence. I mean, those are even parts of the video games you're talking about.
Exactly.
Speak to the boundaries for boys that parents should be concerned about, that dad should be concerned about.
Great. I think that boys need to be trained very early on that if they don't want to be promiscuous, and I don't think any parent wants their son to be promiscuous, you need to train them how. And here's how you do it. You talk about the boundaries they set for themselves. And I talk to boys about this. Boys are very visual people. So a husband teaches a man, you look at a woman, you start to be aroused, turn away. Don't sit there and look and then, you know, start to fantasize and think about this or watch the movie and decide you're going to turn away once you get to a certain point. A smart man teaches his son, turn away immediately. Boundary right away, rule right away, because it just gets harder as you go along. But we're not training boys to do that at all. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, a lot of Christian families don't want their kids sexually active before married. Wonderful. But nobody's treating them how to do it. In order to treat them, you have to teach them how to put stop signs in front of their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's great. That's a good
right
training.
Away. Early.
In the book, Boys Should Be Boys, you mentioned George. I'm sure it's a different name for this person, but this college, I don't know if he's college age or younger, who had an addiction to gaming. Describe George's plight and what needed to be
done.
And
it's not, sad to say, it's not that unusual.
Correct.
This is a boy that started gaming, liked it, an hour to it. And I want to say, very well-educated, conscientious, good parents, friends of mine, okay?
Sure.
Started an hour to a day, and then he was doing more, and he was doing more in the middle of the night. And this is what parents need to realize. No devices in the room after a kid goes to bed, because they'll sit up at 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And this kid just sort of slid into a gaming addiction, unbeknownst to his parents. They started to realize it when he wanted to drop out of basketball, and then he let his girlfriend go. He withdrew from his friends because he was spending upwards of 12 hours a day gaming. Good kid. And he knew when he came to see me, he had a problem. There was an addiction. It had power over him.
Yeah.
Because no one saw what was happening. And this is the destructive behavior a teenage boy can just slide into if his parents aren't really paying attention to what he's doing at 3 a.m. Got it. We got to know that. And to know how to stop it and to know that they have the right, the duty to stop it early on.
Yeah, that's good. Secret number five, acknowledge that virtue is not just for girls. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's spend a little time in this space. How can parents and mentors help train a boy's mind to be inclined toward virtue?
Well, to talk to them about virtue, to talk to them about chivalry, to talk to them about courage and what courage looks like. That courage looks like being afraid you're going to fail, but you step into it anyway. You know, you're scared of algebra, you're going to fall, you're going to take cat. Oh, well, march in there and risk failing because you're a risk taker. You can risk to fail. So talk about, you know, virtues and spell them out. You know, as a parent, name them, you know, perseverance and tenacity and even the fruits of the spirit. Start there and say, this is what, do you aspire to be this way? Do you, yes, I would like to. Well, how are we going to get you there?
Yeah.
You know, it's a we thing, because by the time you're 25, I would like these virtues that you have to be solid. I would like you to be a courageous 25-year-old man who's not afraid to walk into a boardroom or to walk, you know, to your kids or whatever. Is that the kind of person you'd like to be? Yes, Mom. Let's talk about grooming you to get there. If you want to get there, you cannot spend 12 hours a day on a video game. You cannot be having sex with a gazillion girls in college. You cannot be playing beer pong every night of the week in college. If you want to be a successful, strong, courageous man,
yeah,
which every boy will say he wants to be that, well, you're not going to get there if you're doing this at 18.
Yeah.
And so this was, and you know, I'm not passing judgment on parents or this boy or anything. Like I said, it was great. It fell into him because our culture sucks him in like it sucks kids, boys into pornography. It comes to them.
This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, and our guest today is Dr. Meg Meeker, and we're covering just some of the content in her very excellent resource, Boys Should Be Boys, Seven Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. And you'll find that book and other resources to help you in your parenting journey at our website, and that's focusonthefamily.com.
Meg, you write in the book that God makes sense to boys. I love that statement. I mean, I have poured my parenting time into my two boys in that way. I believe they have a firm grip on that. They don't always behave the way I want them to behave. But I mean, generally, they get this. Yeah. It's like, yeah, God does make sense to me. So I think I can attest to that statement, but explain to me why you said that.
Well, here's what I see. Just having watched a generation of kids grow up, kids are born with a sense that there is another world. They're spiritual people. They're
something bigger.
Something bigger. They're open to it. They want to hear about it. They want to see it. They want to talk about it. But I believe, and even Christian parents, is we talk our kids out of God the older they get.
Huh.
Because we feel we need to defend it all the time. And if kids see you constantly defending something, then they say, well, maybe it's not real, or maybe you think it's not real. Case in point, I have had a number of children, young children, under 10, describe angels to me. I'm not kidding you. I have the best job in the world. And I sit there, and one girl recently, she's about 11, describing how she's having a hard time falling asleep at night, and I went through sleep hygiene and da-da-da-da. She said, well, I finally got better because I noticed when I would look at my door and it was dark in the room, an angel would stand in the doorway between my room and the hall, and immediately her mother said, shh, what are you talking about? Don't do that. I said, no, please let her talk. I want to know what she saw.
No kidding.
Yeah. So she describes it. Kids have described that to me. They don't just say that to me when they're 18. When they're 5, they will talk to you about God and what he looks like. They will draw pictures of God. It's natural to them.
Huh.
The sense that God is real is natural. It feels good. They want to pray. Ask a little 5-year-old if they want to pray. Oh, they'll go on and on and on, or they'll let you go on and on and on. And also, as a physician, I had to find studies that showed that believing in God helped you get through school, it kept you away from sex, drugs, and alcohol, it helped your marriage be better. And so I thought, God is good for you. So even parents who don't want to believe in God, perhaps they'll believe the research on God and how good he is for their kids. Your kid is likely to do better in school if he has a strong faith.
Yeah.
Period. So if you don't want to believe me that God is real and that he loves you and your kids like mad, at least look to the research. But kids get it. We train kids out of a belief in God.
Boy, that's sad, actually.
It's very sad. And yeah. Christian parents do that as well. And I've seen this. I've seen it. I've seen it because either they get legalistic or they teach their kids to behave in a certain way when the kids aren't ready, or they want their kids to evangelize in the ninth grade, and kids, you know, we make it too complicated for kids.
Oh, so true. You mentioned a moment ago just about teaching boys about the fruit of the Spirit, mm-hmm. you know, and one of the things with the Beatitudes, of course, you know, we've read those with the boys over and over again. And I remember Trent not long ago, probably a year or two ago, said, you know, I did a word study on that, the meek one, because he's lifting weights. He's a big guy. He's like 6'7". He's big.
Big.
And he said, you know, Dad, that meek statement, it's not being weak. He said meek, it's having the strength to get the job done, yeah. but restraining yourself. Yeah. to put it all in the order of God. I was like, wow. So it's not like, you know, just lay yourself down. It says, I can take care of business, but I'm going to choose God's way of intervening and controlling this situation. That's very masculine.
It's controlled power.
Yeah, you've got the power to
sort
this out.
You have the power. You see the power. You appreciate it and embrace it. But you control it.
I appreciate that. I think that it doesn't make sense the other way, actually, that, you know, just be a doormat.
No.
I mean, again, that connects with men and women.
If you have no power, what is there to control? And
right.
see, that's what we're trying to take away from men. Yes, we want abuse to go away. We want cruelty of men towards women to go away. That's not power. That's mental illness. Okay. But when we talk about true, good, masculine power, we're talking about inordinate strength that is well controlled. And that, to me, is the epitome of masculinity. Look at Jesus on the cross.
Yeah.
He could have jumped down in a minute. But he didn't.
I'll give you an example. I'm always amused by the fact that Jesus said, you know, my father and I talked about how many legions of angels it would take to come down and clean up the garden where he was being arrested. Specifically, he says 12. So he and the father actually communicated on how many legions of angels would we need here, Father.
We can't fathom that.
Yeah, they were ready, but chose not to.
They were ready, but they chose not to. And so it's really, you don't need control if there's really nothing to control.
Let me ask, as we're winding into the end here, how does a father's faith and a mother's faith shape their son's faith?
Well, first of all, we know that boys are more likely to continue on an adult faith if their father had a faith when he was growing up.
Huh, that's good.
Yeah, because they look up to the authority in their dad, and they believe if dad believed in God and taught me about him, then God is really, really, really real. You know, and this really bothers people a lot when I say this. Dads, in a child's eyes, have more authority in many ways than their mothers. And this is why they believe their mom has to tell them nice things because she's mom. Right. Your dad doesn't have to, though. Your mom probably has to take you to church because that's what moms are supposed to do. Or your mom is the one who prays. Your mom is the one who takes you to church, and dad's very skeptical. So two of the best things any good dad can do to a son, make sure you grow your son's faith, take him to church, teach him about God, share your experiences, and be present in his life. If you only do those two things, your kid's not going to go wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's
assuring.
Don't worry about all the other stuff. Those two things, you've got it.
Yeah. Let's end with number 7, which is to remember that the most important person in your son's life is you as a mom or a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's describe that, that influence. You know, I remember seeing a survey, Meg, a while back, but it said, this was of teenagers, that their parents, it was like 60 or 70% said their number one influence in their life was still their parents, mm-hmm. which most of us would, really? It's not their friend group. It's not their social media group. But the fact that they said it was their parents is a little bit jaw-dropping.
You know, you think about your typical 30, 35-year-old person who's struggling and goes into counseling. What do they start talking about first? Their relationship with their mom or their dad. It isn't, well, I had a coach who was mean to me, or my best friend when I was in seventh grade did this. It's all about that primal attachment to a mother and a father. is so deep and so God-given that it shapes the identity of a kid, because they need that parent. They don't need a coach. They don't need a teacher. I mean, in a different way, but it's that attachment to the parent. It's through a mother and father where the child gets their identity, their value, their sense that they're loved. How many 50, 60-year-old men do you know are still trying to prove their worth to their dad?
My dad
would love it that I've made this amount of money. My dad. So we know as adults, it's our parents who really wounded us, but who also shaped the greatness in us, mm-hmm. really. And so, but parents have a hard time believing that because we haven't been trained to think that way. We've been trained to think that when teenagers are teenagers, it's all about peers. So back off, because what teenagers really need is a good set of peers. Yeah, they need a good set of peers, but they need a good, strong parent. And sadly, we have trained fathers to buy into that lie, and that's why so many have disappeared from their kids' lives. Mm. I think that a lot of men who are in prison feel like throwaways.
Mm. They feel
they're throwaways.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted them. Nobody needed them. Even their kids didn't need their dad. All their kids needed was for them to show up, and mom would take it from
them. And a truism is many of them didn't have a dad.
They didn't have a dad. Mm. And any man who grew up, or woman, who didn't have a dad, they'll just spill it. They will. Yeah. They won't be able to articulate how painful and why it was painful. They'll just tell it to you. When I interviewed a lot of women for my father-daughter book, women always had one of two responses. They either gushed about their dad or they broke down in tears.
Yeah.
When it comes to your dad, there's no middle ground.
Interesting.
No middle ground. With your mom, you know, I mean, yeah, you love her and you hate her and this. When it comes to your dad, it's just different. If you had a great dad, you succeed. If your dad wasn't there, you're not sure if you can succeed.
Interesting.
Very true for a boy. And also, that's where a man gets a sense of what masculinity is all about. It's through his dad.
Yeah, that's good. You recount a story about counseling a father who was having difficulty communicating with his son. That would, like every dad would put mm-hmm. his hand up, oh, that must be me. But they kept repeating kind of the same things this dad did, that he was fathered mm-hmm. like. Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't fall far from the tree, mm-hmm. basically.
No.
And sometimes that's hard because our dad was not a good father.
Right.
And we repeat those mistakes. How did that story end?
Well, it can end in many different ways. Because I've worked with a lot of fathers who grew up without a dad. And dads come into parenting with a preload. I never knew my dad. I feel pain of not having my dad. My dad was always abusive to me, and we take that into parenting. And then if a dad is parenting a son, he begins to repeat that, being abusive or just leaving his son or not communicating. Unless a dad recognizes that his behavior came because he was taught it from his childhood by his own dad, he can't disrupt the behavior and change.
Yeah.
If a dad was yelled at and he grows up and starts yelling at his son, he'll never be able to stop yelling at his son unless he recognizes he learned it when he was a kid and he's got to stop. Because the patterns are so ingrained, we repeat what we know.
Yeah.
We don't do what we want, we repeat what we know. Mm-hmm. And so in a situation like dad, that I'm not communicating to my son because I was never shown how to communicate.
Yeah.
So let's figure this out. So, son, I'm not communicating with you well because I didn't ever learn how to do it. So let's start fresh. How do you need me to communicate with you? Help me out here. Or, son, I'm so sorry I'm yelling at you. I don't know any different. I'm going to really work hard in this. Can you help me stop yelling at you? You say that to a kid, you've won him over.
Yeah.
You say to your 17-year-old boy, son, I am not treating you well. I want to change, hold me accountable, but help me along the way because I don't really know what you need. You're in. I mean, that's all kids want.
Meg, for both the mom and the dad, one of the, you know, great guilts that we carry can be that our boys aren't performing. You know, they're just not hitting the standard. They're not hitting the mark. And you could pick the age. It doesn't matter whether they're teens or 20s. Speak to that idea of grace. You know, the longer I live, the more the analogy of God's character toward us is like a father. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is our creator. He is our Abba Father, the scripture says, mm-hmm. to refer to him as daddy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But to bring that down to earth, so to speak, how do we do that with our own children, yeah. particularly our boys, as we're talking about boys today. But how do we emulate the grace of God toward that prodigal yeah. child?
I think it's a great question. I learned this through a friend, actually, who had a son who got a girl pregnant at 16. And she was beside herself. Christian mom, I think she even, you know, did a lot of work at a church. Very, very bright woman. And she was beside herself. I failed. This kid's been brought up in the church. He loves Christ. What has happened? And she said she's walking along the beach and she was quiet. And all of a sudden, she didn't hear a voice, but she heard God sort of speak to her in her spirit. Now, wait a minute. I'm the perfect father. And look at my kids. Mm. And so you can be a perfect parent and you can have a 16-year-old who's going off the rails.
Right.
Because God is a perfect parent. But that's the free will. But again, even if he's going off at the rails at 16, you've still got 9 years left to get him to 25. It's not always about you. You know, God's in there too, and kids have free will, and they have different personalities. They have very different, and we know that. There's a whole lot of nature in there too. And, you know, we do the best we can, and that's good enough.
Well, in part, you know, we love free will when we're talking mm-hmm. about our behavior before the yeah. Lord.
Mm-hmm. But not when it comes,
when it comes
kids.
To our kids. Because yeah. that yeah. represents yeah. us, right? But
well,
it is an amazing.
And I feel for parents. And I want to say a parent with a child who's being born right now has a much tougher row to hoe than I did.
Yeah. And I think at the end here, Meg, you and I both have heard this over and over again. The things that we talk about here at Focus on the Family, it's not a formula. Mm-mm. These are prescriptive suggestions, recommendations. If you do these things, there is a higher potential yeah. of success, not a guarantee. Mm-hmm. And so because people have free will, your children have free will. Yep. We have free will before the Lord. So in that context, we can only do the right things and then trust God.
Absolutely.
That will sink in at some point.
Absolutely.
And yep. not to over-own it.
No, don't over-own it. I have another friend who adopted a very, very high-need daughter, and the daughter died of a drug overdose at 22, and I failed. I said, wait a minute. If you hadn't adopted her when she was 6, she probably would have died at 14. And she knew the Lord when she died at 22. You yeah. succeeded.
Heartbreaking. Mm.
It's heartbreaking, but we are here to steward these kids. I would also encourage parents, keep it simple.
I like that.
Give them enough attention. Give them some affection. Affirm them before God. You know, give them a faith, and it's going to be okay because what your kids want is your attention and your love and your time, and they want you to listen to them.
Yeah. I like that.
It's
parenting isn't algebra.
No,
it's
and you don't have to have a PhD.
Addition and
but yeah. we think it's algebra because there's so much out there on the internet. There's so much pop psychology and so much parenting advice that's so overcomplicated, and a lot of it's just bad anyway. But you know, but just really keep it simple and trust your instincts, because God will show you if you really, you know, have some humility, and you know it. It's really not rocket science, yeah. but it feels like it because we just want to get it right.
Yeah, we want to be perfect.
And you tough. Can. You've got the wiring. Every dad and mother have all the wiring they need. They just need someone to encourage them to keep using it and just keep on going.
So good. Dr. Meg Meeker, this has been great. Your book, Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. I so appreciate the content. Thank you for writing it, number one.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for being here, number two.
You bet. It's always a pleasure, and thank you for what you do
as well.
It's
so good. And we want to get this into your hands as a parent, as a grandparent to give to your adult children. This is wonderful guidelines and, again, prescriptions on how to help build your sons into becoming men. And, you know, 7 things. I think you can grab those and run with them. Mm-hmm. And if you can support the ministry monthly, that's great. A one-time gift is good. If you can do either, we'll send you a copy of Meg's book as our way of saying thank you for being part of the ministry and helping other families to be stronger in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, support this show and the general ministry of Focus on the Family when you call today and make a generous donation. Our number is 800, the letter A and the word family. You can also donate and request Meg's book, Boys Should Be Boys, when you stop by FocusOnTheFamily.com. On behalf of the entire team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.